Welcome to Good Dogs. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host Carol Borden, who founded and runs Guardian Angels Medical Service Dogs, where they breed, raise, and train and place these companion working dogs with people who need them, and all for no cost. We both believe that all dogs can be good dogs, but that dog training starts with people training. And the better you understand your dog, the better you can communicate with them and make them the best canine citizens they can be. This is not specifically a training show. It's also understanding dogs from the outside in, how to read their body language and what they're telling you, and from the inside out, to know that each dog's an individual and needs to be seen as such and lived with alongside us with joy and compassion. Hey, Carol, you are the woman who knows how to take puppies and turn them into great citizens. And I guess even for average, everyday, just hang around the house, go on hikes with people, dogs, a big issue is going to the vet. And I've never quite understood when I go to the vet, my dogs love the vet. Every dog I've ever had loves the vet, no matter what their personality. I think it must come from whatever vibe I'm giving them. But people have dogs at the vet trembling, salivating, cowering, just completely terrified. Other people's dogs have to be tranquilized, technically tranquilized for the vet to handle them. Can we talk a little bit about how to either, well, let's talk about setting a good foundation with a dog you get, whether it's by rescue or as a baby, and then talk about maybe how we can undo some of this fear damage.
Oh, good point, Tracy. Great topic. And you're absolutely spot on talking about the foundation, because what people don't realize is that this is one of the things I teach in my college course, and I say over and over, every interaction with a dog is teaching it something, whether it's good or bad. And so what's happening with these dogs is they're being pulled out of a secure environment, what they're used to in their own home, and all of a sudden being subjected to something that can be quite terrifying depending on the nerve level of the dog, and also depending on any past history this dog may have encountered that was negative. So whether you're raising your dog from a puppy or you got it from a shelter, let's talk about foundation training. What you want to do to be able to prepare your dog for veterinary visits is multifaceted. When you're sitting there just petting your dog, relaxing, maybe it's after work, you're watching TV, dog comes and cuddles up with you, you should be handling his ears and his toes and his mouth and lifting up his lips and touching his teeth and running your hand down his belly and down his tail. And we call it counting toes. I mean, we literally do these exercises with our dogs. And, you know, we call it, let me see how many toes you have today.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we make it a very happy, positive experience. Because guess what's going to happen when they go to the vet? They're going to listen to their lungs. They're going to maybe clip their toenails. They're going to look in their ears. You know, they might stick a fecal loop up there behind. You know, there's all these things that we have not prepared our dog for. The next step, once you have gotten him very comfortable with being handled, have other family members do the same thing. Have your friends do it when they come over. Do it in different rooms. Don't just do it in the same place all the time, because every room offers a different feel. So do it in the bathroom where it's a smaller enclosed area. Because guess what? The exam room is going to be a smaller area as well. Do you take your dog for a ride in the car? If you do, is it only to go to the vet where he has a bad experience? Is he trembling when he's thinking about getting in the car? Does he get car sick? So if those are any of the answers to those questions are yes, then you are already setting him up for a negative experience. You've got to break it down into baby steps and work on each of those issues before you ever go to the vet. You should take a car ride around the block. Make it fun. Make it happy. Nothing bad happened. If your dog gets car sick, make it very short trips where you just go sit in the car. Then you turn the car on. Then you maybe go down the driveway and back up. Just depends on the dog. You have to watch the dog. Is he starting to salivate? Is he starting to pant? Is he acting nervous? Then stop. Take the pressure off. Make it a happy ending and go back inside and just do this several times and build up. So let's say you've done all of these things. Your dog loves to go for a ride. He doesn't have a problem with you handling his feet. But when you get there, all of a sudden he panics. He's not happy. He's shaking. He's scared. Well, then back up. Say, you know what? He has a couple of weeks before his vaccines are really due. If that's the reason for your visit, if it's not something super important, you have to be seen that day. I need to give my dog a chance to get comfortable. So I would actually like to just come sit in your waiting room a few times
right.
and give my dog treats and make it a happy experience. Because you know what? In the end, a dog that's happy and easy to handle is an asset for the dog psyche, for the owner's psyche, for the veterinarian and the tech staff that are all having to handle this dog. And so you've got to turn things around. And you can even let the veterinarian know when you go in, if you'll give him just a minute and just make friends with him and talk to him, he'll be okay. But if you just start reaching for him, grabbing him, he might be startled. Because every dog has a different tolerance. Our dogs, of course, have tons of socialization, confidence building, different things that we do for every single one of our dogs. Plus, we're extremely fortunate that we have our own veterinary hospital, so we can practice these things on a regular basis. Every one of our dogs, whether he needs it or not, comes to the veterinary hospital at least once a month because we run fecals, we do preventatives, you know, their heartworm and all of those types of things. So they're all getting exposed and they're all having a wonderful experience. So when they go to another veterinary hospital, it's not going to come as a surprise to them. Not everyone, of course, has that opportunity. And yes, we did have to used to take all of our dogs to regular veterinarians. But it was always a comfortable experience for them because we had done the foundation work in advance. So I can't stress enough how important that is. Now, even with baby puppies, you should be taking them on a regular basis for all of their vaccines. And so you should make those happy visits too. Are they going to get poked and prodded a little bit? Are they going to get a shot? Yes, but make it a party.
Right, so exactly. You go, that's yes. So great, and here's the doctor. In other words, really do make it a party in your voice and in your body yes. language.
Yes. Yeah, tone of voice is extremely important. Doesn't even matter what you're saying.
That's right.
But instead of going, oh, poor thing, you just got a shot. Okay, now you're playing into it. Now if the
right.
puppy just cried or the puppy was concerned, now you're petting the puppy and going, oh, poor thing. Well, that's fine for your two-year-old. But what you're telling the puppy is, oh, I really like the way you behaved. I want you to always feel this way because I'm going to pet you for acting like that. No, instead you make it a party. You go, oh, wasn't that fun? Did we have a good time? Here's a little
right,
treat that I brought with
right.
us. So you could have your treat or your little squeaky toy now that it's all finished. And so now you're making it a really happy ending for that dog. And now he's completely forgotten about that little pinprick that he got. And he's going, oh, okay, we get to play when I get here. Oh, I get my favorite treat when I get here. Okay. I'm going to look forward to coming again the next time.
Exactly. So, they now have, and I must say he's done a really great job with the fear-free training and fear-free practices. At first I thought, well, that's a bit gimmicky, but it's not. It's quite a wonderful thing. And first they were having individual vets take this course. It was very straightforward. But some mm-hmm. of it was maybe intuitive, but who had which vet or which vet tech had taken the time to break down all the things that are done to a dog in the vet's office that are just routine and don't seem like anything to the vet or vet tech, but mm-hmm. to the dog and certainly the more sensitive dogs or what you call the nervy ones, it can mm-hmm. be harsh. So now my vet, and I was kind of surprised because everyone there is way cool and sweet anyway, they all have a badge on their uniform saying fear-free practice, and they've all taken the course. So if people
wonderful.
Know about that, it's quite wonderful. It was really Sophia Yin who invented the idea, if you will, an extraordinary vet behaviorist who tragically took her own life and a great, really great beloved figure in the veterinary field. But she came up with this idea that there was such a thing as fear-free handling, and everyone had to understand the ways in which we touch and talk to dogs makes a difference, mm-hmm. or cats, in how they
yeah.
react. So that's another thing to be aware of. You know, if you If your vet doesn't have it, ask them if they could all take the course. Or if you're looking for a new vet, that would be a criteria, right, for a vet who's aware of a dog's emotional state in the office.
You know, one of the things that's so sad today, Tracy, and we coach our service dogs, our disabled teams on this a lot, you know, time is money. And
that's right.
So there are a lot of big practices. I'm not going to name any kind of names.
Right.
But, you know, it's all about how many dogs can be seen in a day. So you walk into the exam room. Next thing you know, somebody's grabbing your dog off the table and saying, we'll be back with your dog in a minute.
Right.
Oh, absolutely not.
Thank you.
We tell our teams, absolutely not. Because what they're doing, before they ever give the dog an opportunity, they don't give the dog an opportunity to act one way or the other. They just put the strong arm hold on it, you know, take the blood,
take the fecal,
give the shots, and bring the dog back in. And so you don't know what's going on in the other room. And you don't ever have to strong. Listen, I have a dog, a big dog. And he was mishandled outside of my purview when I was not around. And it terrified him of being restrained. And you can ask this dog to do anything. He will hand you his leg.
Is he the guy I met in person?
Yes, you did.
He's a great dog. Oh, my God. He's so – I mean, all of your dogs are big, but he's got to weigh in at like 130 pounds.
He's not quite that big, but he's a big boy.
He's a big boy.
And so if you just ask him, I need you to lay down. I need you to lay on your back. I need you to be on your side. If you just ask him for what you need, show him what it is you're asking, he'll do it. And he will tolerate anything you do if you ask. But if you go over and you try to put that chokehold on him with your arms around him and start to restrain him, he will fight you like a wild stallion. Because he does not know why you're doing this. He's more than happy to cooperate. But this doesn't happen when time is money. And you've got to run through. You've got to meet your criteria. You've got to meet your numbers. You have to see so many dogs. Because if you have to take time to pacify the owner, if you will, by taking time with the dog, you're losing valuable time where you could have seen two or three more dogs that day. And that's a very, very sad and unfortunate way for things to be. And we do instruct our teams, if you have that happen, you tell them, absolutely not. This is my service dog. You do not separate my service dog from a disabled handler. And if you're not willing to do it that way, we'll go someplace else.
Well, that's, you know, a really great point about advocacy. I had a dog who came from Southampton Shelter. She'd been there 6 months. I don't know why. She was a pretty girl. I don't know why no one took her, Jazzy. She did not like to be exactly what you're saying about your dog. And maybe she had had a bad experience being restrained.
Mm-hmm.
But she couldn't tolerate. I mean, she'd show you her teeth. She could not bear being manhandled, hauled, pulled around, forced into a position, or even much restrained on the leash. But anything you told her and explained to her, literally explained, modeled it, she'd do it. And I always was very clear. Sometimes a vet tech would be taught in school, you know, a kind of arm around the chest / neck of a dog. And I always would advocate before that even was done, sorry, no, you can't do that with her. You cannot hold her that way. So you do kind of have to speak up, even if the vet or the vet tech might say, I didn't mean any harm. Well, it's not a criticism of you. I'm telling you, this dog won't tolerate that. It won't go well for any of us. So, you know, I think that if people miss that information from an individual dog, either the vet or really it's on the owner, doesn't realize it, those are the dogs that maybe down the road have to be tranked for a vet to check their heart.
Mm-hmm. Because they keep getting worse and worse.
Yes, they pushed the boundary. Nobody respected the dog, said, I'm here. I'll do what you want, but I got to do it my way. You know,
you can compare it to my mother is quite elderly. She doesn't always understand everything going on. And so if she's frightened, am I going to just allow the doctor to rush her in the back room anyway and poke and prod and do whatever while she's crying out in fear? Of course not. I'm going to stop them and say, let me talk to her for a second and make sure she understands and she calms down. So it's the same thing. You know, she isn't able to speak for herself at this point in her life,
yes.
And neither is the dog. So if people would relate it in those terms, you are the voice of your dog. You are his advocate. Yes, they have to behave, and sometimes owners do make it worse.
They do.
But if you will train yourself and do the foundation work I was referring to, then it's going to be a much easier situation for everyone involved, and mostly for your dog. So you're not compounding the problem, you're improving the problem.
Yeah, well said. And just as a final note, I've never understood exactly why. I guess it's that I really like vets and I like learning things and I like being there. Obviously not in the ER when you run in and the dog is, you know,
sure,
vomiting for hours. But in any kind of a regular visit, even if you're discussing something serious, I just think vets are fascinating and so personable if you give them a chance to tell you mm-hmm. things and discuss things. And I think my dogs pick up that energy because they go to the vet and they think it's a great chance to be alone in a room with me where I'm sitting down or mm-hmm. standing still. I'm usually on the move and they see it as a moment to get all this personal attention. Maisie, the other day, we had to wait 5 minutes. She thought it was heaven. There's a bench in the exam room. She was standing on the bench, licking me. Just, she couldn't stop herself. She said, this is so great. We get to visit with you. So, you know, you can make it into something really positive.
That's right.
And even if the dog's had a bad experience in the past, I think the things we're talking about go a long way. There also are pheromone collars, which you have if you have a really nervy dog. The pheromone collars work for some dogs, but they have to be worn all the time. So you can always experiment. If you have a dog that you feel reacts a lot to stuff in a way that is anxious or worried, you can try one. I mean, I've always, separate conversation we'll have in another show, I've always, when bringing a new dog into the household, I put a pheromone collar on the existing dogs for at least a week beforehand. And the new dog immediately when I get it. And I don't know, maybe I've just been lucky and it's worked. But this is important that we count toes. So that's the parting message to you guys. Practice counting your dog's toes and your kitty's toes if they'll let you. That way you can also trim their nails more easily. Thank you, Carol, for all this great and loving advice.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tracy.